Hello, my fans, friends. Welcome to the Rich Herring podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. Thanks to everyone who's come to see the Can I Have My Ball Back tour so far. It's been going really well. I've got a 4-star review in The Standard, 4-star review in The Telegraph, who once called me the worst comedy experience of the year, so that's a turnaround. People have been coming, people have really been enjoying it, and it's getting better and better. The only gigs this week are both in Pocklington, the town I was born in, near York. There's a couple of tickets left for the evening show and a few more tickets left for the matinee, I think about 4:30. But love to see you there, Yorkshire. Pop along. Check richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs to see if I'm coming near to you. There are tickets left for nearly every show in the tour. I think Norwich has sold out. And a couple of gigs in London could do with your support as well. Anyway, please listen to the podcast. Do spread the news about the podcast to your friends. Listen as much as you can. Numbers are slightly down, which may affect the future of this podcast. So just leave it playing, even if you're not in the room. Love you. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy whatever it is you're going to listen to.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Leicester Square Theatre. Please welcome a man who is removing the clothes pegs from his penis and testicles right now. It's Richard Herring. Hello. Hello. Welcome to Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast. I was hanging out with the Wolf of Wall Street the other day. The guy the film's based on. I was eating some cocaines off... off a prostitute's bottom. I found the whole experience quite unhygienic, if I'm honest. He calls it relativist. I don't know if it's going to catch on. So I'll very briefly tell you what's going on in the countryside before we move on to the show. We saw some lambs being born yesterday, which is not... Yeah. Saw a horse really close up and nearly got electrocuted by an electric fence. It was good. My daughter wasn't interested. A neighbour had invited us up to see the lambs, and my daughter thought the lambs were rubbish and going, where are the pigs? And he said, we don't have any pigs. They did have two last year, but they're in the freezer now. So that's the way the countryside works. Don't know if you should have just opened the freezer. There they are, look. There's Pepper and Grandpa Pig, played by Brian Blessed. My son ate his first solids today, so that's an exciting. It's some apple. It's kind of that's a fucking crazy moment. You've been drinking milk for 6 months, 5 or 6 months, and then suddenly they put like some food in your mouth, and you go. He went. You think that's the moment, isn't it? That's the moment where your life begins when you have your first actual food. Anyway, I'm going to crack straight on. We're going to welcome my guest this week. He is probably best known for his appearance on Dick and Dom in Da Bungalow. Mainly what we're going to talk to him about. It's Al Murray, ladies and gentlemen. It's Al Murray. Alan Murray. Oh, no, it's like Brian Blessed all over again.
No, it isn't.
If you want to just get up and do your show for an hour, and I'll just see you, I'm very happy to do that.
All right, what would you do? Not here to do that.
So, what about Dick and Dom in the Bungalow?
I couldn't get the fucking custard out of my ears. It was the last Dick and Dom in Da Bungalow ever. Yeah. And so that it kind of had that, you know, when you're at a last program of a series, yeah. you know about that. You're a connoisseur of that experience. Although it's quite a while ago. And got to really cast your mind back, Rich. And they were mad for gunging people in custard, really, really madly into it. And I remember later that afternoon beginning to panic that I basically sort of had organic mat food in my ears. Because I always had real problems with my ears when I was a kid, like ear infections. Every this time of year, every year, always a week off school with terrible ear infections for some reason.
Yeah.
And I remember getting, you know, that by that evening thinking, I just can't get this fucking cuss out of my ears. I'm going to get another ear infection. I think, you pair of twats. But I used to love that program. They were really, really brilliant, daft kids entertainers, but people didn't, you know, they're one of those comedy acts who suffered from people going, what a stupid title. Yeah, the title's a joke.
They're no Trevor and Simon,
no. And which reminds me that at one point I was going to audition to replace Trevor and Simon.
Oh, well, yeah, we talked, because Trevor and Simon were on here this series, which is why I brought them up.
With
but
Ben.
We talked about, the two of you.
Yeah, and I in the end said, I'm not fucking doing it.
It's a good call.
Yeah, I know.
I'd forgotten that, and now you've said that, I remember that.
It was a summer web, and Ben really had the hump with me, and I'm like, I've always been sort of forthright with my language. I remember saying to him, we're going to be the pair of cunts that aren't Trevor and Simon.
Yeah. And those two blokes
the two
were.
Blokes. I can't remember who they were, because they were kind of around at the time, and I think they may have become dentists.
One of them is still an actor, Nicholas, but he's called Nicholas Ball, which is the same name as another actor, so I think he's called Nick Ball, but there's a Nicholas Ball.
Okay.
Hall, or Ball.
That happens.
And the other one, because I looked them up for Trevor and Simon,
right.
The other one is now a headmaster and a vicar. I wonder if anyone who is at a school knows about his life, his other life, yeah, being on, because there isn't any clips of them on.
Yeah, it's before the internet.
Yeah, so there's no clips of them.
He hasn't had to scrub it.
No.
He hasn't got a Sri Lankan click farm working all day, every day, erasing him from the internet.
He was quite hard to work out to find him. I won't say his name, mainly because I don't remember what it is, but it wouldn't be fair.
We were supposed to audition for that, and I said, I'm just not doing this. It's a really bad idea. And I know, even now, I know I was right.
You definitely were right. And it's interesting, because I think those, you know, those guys are very similar to you, I think, you know.
Yeah.
And they were in a similar position.
No, completely, which is why we were sort of in the frame. And
it'd be very tempting to go, yeah, it's TV, let's go for it. And
get dashed on the rocks of the thing. When you're not ready, when you're not experienced enough, or not got enough in ideas or any of that. Anyway.
Well, I think Trevor and Simon owned it so much as well.
Exactly.
It was just impossible to follow them.
Exactly. Yeah, it'd be like, you know, what's your name? David and Harvey's Fist of Fun.
I would like to see that.
Actually.
With dick pics at the start.
You could crowdfund it, couldn't you? You know how to do that.
Let's do it.
Help me spunk 12 grand. On two randoms reading stuff that me and Stu never got round to doing.
probably got it. It's all somewhere. There's loads of stuff. So, Al, you've recently become a father again after you've done... And I've been asking guests, like, what's the best time to become a parent? Like, when you're young, so your kids are growing up and then you have the rest of your life. Or when you're old, so you have your life and then you don't have any life after they're born, like I've done. You've done both.
Yes,
you've
I had children in my early 30s and then... And then circumstances, which is the best way of talking. You know, I'm not one of those sort of American comics, because my second wife, well, you know, the problem with her was she would always, she'd always burn her. She'd always burn the ham. And I mean, why are you always fucking burning the ham?
That's pretty accurate.
That's basically it.
It is.
I don't know why you're always burning the fucking ham. I was burning, fuck you fuck. Right? It's no punchline. You just have to. I mean, that's one of the interesting things. There was a stage in the Edinburgh Festival where Americans would just have to basically get off a boat, roll up in Edinburgh, go, what? So, you know, in that Chippewadoc affair, there was two guys, McConaughey and Mulligan. What the fuck's that about? And the Scottish critics would go, oh my God, I can't believe it. There's an American comedian in Edinburgh. And completely blow their chumps over it. Anyway, the point is, Yes, circumstances. There's an intervening circumstance between... Yeah. I have an 18-year-old and a 14-year-old.
Yes.
And then they're 15-week-old. All girls, because girls are best. And my 18, my oldest, Scarlett, who's 18, she's at Bristol Uni now.
Okay.
So she is an actual... She's a fucking grown-up.
Yeah.
Right? I don't know if she's a fucking grown-up. Although, the thing is, we share an iPhone account, and Tinder appeared on my phone. So I messaged my two daughters, one who's 14, the other's 18. Tinder has just appeared on my phone, right? And she just gave me, she just sent a thumbs up.
Wow.
World's changed. when she went off to uni in September, she was like, or October, she was like, oh yeah, but because the baby came in December, she was like, oh yeah, one in, one out, like that. Called the baby the replacement for quite a bit. Which is great.
How are you finding going back to... Because it's as an older man, you're approaching 50. It's a very old age.
Approaching? I mean, is the word approaching appropriate to feeling like you're driving 180 miles an hour towards a fucking brick wall? Is that...
I'm through the brick wall. I'm out the other side.
Yeah, yeah. How is it?
It's marvellous.
Sunlit uplands.
It's the sunlit uplands.
The sunlit uplands of your Brexit 50s.
Yes, yeah.
Is it everything? Global herring?
Well,
I've
moved to Hertfordshire, so, you know. It's
more global.
Yeah, it's all happening.
Can't wait for that blue passport. Fuck me. They were black, right? One of the things that's going on right now in politics is people are barefaced fucking lying the whole time. And they're going, it's a return, we're going to finally get our iconic blue passport back. And they show a blue passport. They were never that colour.
Yeah.
That's all.
They were dark.
No, they were black. They were fucking black. And apparently the reason they were that colour, and sometimes dark blue and sometimes black, is because back then, before anyone gave a flying fuck about design, they didn't settle on a Pantone for it. So it would just be whatever ink the passport office had to dye the colours that were laid down, get this, by the League of Nations in 1921. A foreign power. Sorry, authority. But there you go. History. No point learning any. No, but it's brilliant being a dad again. Yeah. It's really ace. Although my ankle hurts and my knee hurts and I'm tired, but I'm much more chilled about it than I was. The first baby, when you get home with one's first baby, you think, everything I do will kill this child. I'll pick it up. I might kill it.
Yeah.
Put it back down. It will die.
And by the third one, the man.
Third one, whatever. Are you crying, are you? Mm. I'm going downstairs. See this? Caught a door. There's another one down there as well. There'll be two between us.
they're fairly hardy on the whole. So, yeah, it's good.
No, you've got to really try.
You've got to really try.
I gather.
Yes. So yeah, but it's a, you know, I worry about like seeing my one to university, my two to university. I mean, one of them's a bit stupid, so the second one, I think the boy might get to university. And not sexist, just my daughter's stupid. That's I was pushing my daughter on the swing.
Coincidence, isn't it?
I pushed my daughter on the swing the other day, and she was grabbing at the. She's grabbing every time we got to the top. I said, what are you doing? She said, I'm trying to catch the clouds. Stupid. They're 500 feet in the air. She's never going to get them.
500 feet? That's a very low carriage. I think someone else is stupid around here.
Approximately. I wonder whether I will... I'll live to see my...
Your dick, like approximately...
It's approximately
500 feet.
500 feet. That's how I measured how high the clouds were.
You're in dense fog, weren't you?
Why have you gone back to having more children, you idiot? You could have had your whole...
You know what it's like when a woman says, I'll leave you?
I am aware of that.
Yet again. Cast your mind back.
I'm aware of that.
to Tuesday. And no, I just sort of, it felt like the, yeah, you know, no, it was time to do it again, you know, finally. And I kind of, you know, I got drag kicking and screaming because I am old. And also one of the things about having, you know, an 18-year-old and a 14-year-old is my 18-year-old has finally exited the arsehole phase.
Right.
She was an arsehole for 5 years. Solid. She's just a prick now.
Yeah.
Right? and we were all arseholes. 13 to 18. Yeah. Yeah. Prick till you're 21.
Yeah.
Twat till you're 25.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, this is all shifting with, you know, the new world that we live in now. I mean, I think people are probably pricks now till they're 30.
No, definitely.
And 40 is the new, like, 30, so... So they're prick. Well, so they're. Well, I don't know. Anyway, it doesn't matter. taking that joke to breaking point.
Let's leave this behind because it's a bit crude. Have you, if you had to have a chocolate bar inserted in your anus, which? But I mean, you can choose which chocolate bar it is. Which chocolate bar would you put up there? They're laughing already.
Topic.
Topic is good.
What has a hazelnut in every bite? Topic. Short, you see. Topic is chunky but short, so yeah, you get it over with.
Yeah.
You wouldn't want like a full, you wouldn't want a marathon duo.
George wants a Toblerone from an airport up there. No, my wife's always ill. Not tonight, George, you've got a headache. Bye!
That would like make a rippling noise, wouldn't it, as you...
And now with the new ones, if we, I don't know if the big ones are still...
Yeah, not as big as they were, are they? Yeah.
Yeah.
Brexit.
I mean, there's some...
Fucking Brussels.
I'll ask you this question. I'll do a couple of merged questions now we're here. What is the worst music you've ever had on whilst having sex? Preferably, you know, like, as I've said, I had Enya's Sail Away, which was difficult to cope with.
Well, so did I.
Did you?
That's who you are. Yeah. I knew your face from somewhere.
Both of us failing.
Oh God, that's a. The Christians. Do you remember them?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I had an extremely unsatisfying short encounter at university.
Yes.
We're very drunk. Delight, a lovely drunk lady.
Yes.
Put the Christians on. Forgotten Town. Like that. And I think I got about halfway through the first number on the cassette. Didn't get to hear any of the deep cuts on the B-side.
And maybe that was why I got the Enya Sail Away on, because that would be hard to ejaculate to. So that's just a way of prolonging the experience for the lady. It's quite a clever choice.
Yeah, no, clearly, yeah. Clearly, she was playing her cards right.
Yeah, although I that the opposite problem was probably the issue. I couldn't.
Which opposite problem?
Well, I couldn't. I didn't find it arousing to have Enya on.
All right.
Have you ever worked as a dominatrix at any point?
Not to my knowledge. I used to live with someone who was going out with one.
Oh, yes, that's yes. Yeah. So you did, yes.
Yeah.
I'd forgotten about that.
Yeah. I haven't. Yeah, he wasn't happy about that.
No.
Well, I couldn't make his mind up. Like the idea.
Yeah.
In principle.
Yeah.
But not in practice.
Yeah, well, it's difficult because, you know, your partner is going out and... Well, not as Desiree said, you know, you're not actually... She was a virgin, she wasn't having sex with people, so, you know, but you're going out and stomping on men's necks. It's difficult if you're the partner of that person.
Yeah.
If you're a young idiot. Whoever this young man may have been... here's another emergency question for you. Would you rather be able to stop time and rewind your life 20 seconds, but only once per day,
or touch God's cock?
B.
B.
Touch God's cock. Yeah. Then I'm the bloke who's touched God's cock.
That's true.
Right, that's like a... That's you set up a church of the touched cock of God.
Yeah.
You register as a charity, because churches are charities. Fucking bazinga.
Wouldn't you be worried it would be a bit like a Raiders of the Lost Ark scenario, where if you touched God's cock, you would all get burnt up?
It's worth a pun. I mean, 20 seconds. That, you've not really offered... That really is not like a fair fight between those two options.
No. All right, 25 seconds.
Hiya.
Would you like to travel back in time, Al?
Yeah, I would, definitely.
Where'd you go if you could travel back in time?
There's so many brilliant places you could go, aren't there? There's so many interesting things. And it's whether you want to be a participant or simply an observer.
Okay.
Which, after all, is the time traveller's conundrum,
it's
isn't
a conundrum,
it?
Yeah.
Is to simply observe and not change the course of events because of the grandfather paradox, as we know. Or whether you, get fucking stuck in.
Yeah.
And then, of course, open a history book when you get home and there's a picture of you and you go, oh, my God. Which is how bad writing about time travel is. It's those two options.
It is.
Wouldn't it be interesting to be a fly on the wall at the cabinet meeting where, in the run-up to the Iraq war, they're discussing actually what intelligence they actually had? No, seriously, because the thing is there is now a story about the fact they lied, right, and everything. But at the time, they had... When you look at any historical story about when people are sifting intelligence, right, and trying to weigh intelligence up, they bring to it a set of preconceptions where there's what they want from the intelligence, what the intelligence actually offers them, and then how that then plays out. And a really good example of that is a thing I'm really interested in, which is the Battle of Arnhem, which famously, if you've seen A Bridge Too Far, the myth is we knew perfectly well there were tanks there all along and it was kept secret from the men who were sent there, right? Well, that's not the case. That isn't what happened. They knew the tanks were there, which is why they sent more men than they originally planned to send to deal with that problem, and even then they couldn't deal with the problem. So they did assess the intelligence. They then made a decision based on it because they were so excited about the potential outcome, the potential result, which would be ending the war in 1944. Brilliant. You know, who could argue against that possible outcome, right? But they didn't take the intelligence seriously enough and overestimated their own capability, which is exactly what happened in the Iraq war. The outcome that you get rid of Saddam Hussein is arguably completely a desirable outcome, arguably. There's lots of firm arguments for that, right? But they misinterpreted the intelligence because they wanted it to give them something that they could use, right? And that it would be brilliant to be in that cabinet room watching Campbell although that wasn't even a cabinet decision, was it? But watching those people argue about that, and John Scarlett come in and go, well, I got this, and you can spin it that way if you want. That would be amazing, because that's the most important political event of the last 20 years, by a long way. That moment, that decision, how you made that decision, because that decision is the moment that discredits cabinet politics, parliamentary politics, party politics, has destroyed it. That moment of trust being destroyed. Because every moment of trust that succeeded that has been because of that. Or has lived in the light of that moment. And if they'd thought differently, you know, maybe we wouldn't have joined the American coalition and we wouldn't now have a situation where party politics is regarded as this sort of, as this basically hollowed out joke.
Yeah.
So that would be a brilliant thing to see.
It would. And then you could come back and let them know.
I'd come back and go, they all, because you could come back and go, they all, as far as they could tell, it was kosher.
Yeah.
You know, because that often that's what happens with intelligence summaries, is as far as you can tell from what's in front of you, it really is real.
Yeah.
And, in the Iraq war, Saddam, in the run-up to the Iraq war, Saddam had a very good reason to maintain the notion that he had weapons of mass destruction to try and stop him from being attacked.
Yeah.
Right? If you remove him from how you view that scenario, it's all quite easy to explain. But if you do remove him, you're not being honest about the entire picture. But it would be brilliant to be at that moment and see what was actually going, because we all know what we fucking think, and it's coloured everything that's happened politically since. You know, the crash, the expenses scandal, the 2010 coalition government, all of that has been in the light of the that failure of trust that we all think comes from the dodgy dossier and everything. And maybe it was a dodgy. It would be, I just want to know, you know, what the new. So, because if we are right to not trust them, that would be. It'd be good to know that we're right.
That'll probably come out though, won't it? Eventually.
Well, it might do. I hung out last year. I hung out with a guy who was on the Chilcot report. A guy called Larry Friedman, who's a academic who set up the staff college at Shrivenham, right? And he's a really amazing man and really fascinating bloke. And you talk to him about it, and he goes, they really did think they were doing the right thing, which doesn't mean that they were doing the right thing, but they really, you know, honestly went into it, honestly thinking they were doing the right thing. Right?
Well, I think, because I
And lots of things in history with great outcomes of people been going into it, honestly thinking they're doing the right thing.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, I think Tony Blair was so cautious throughout his early prime ministership, because he had that massive majority, and then he felt like it's all going to happen, and everyone was behind him, and then he was like, oh, I don't want to upset
Well, no, he's frightened of... he said that, you know, they had that landslide majority, and then they were worried about the Daily Mail, and they could have reformed the House of Lords, they could have torn so much fucking stuff up, and they did do radical things like abolishing third world debt and all that, but I'm not interested in defending the Blair government.
No.
Because they were a government, so they were obviously shit. Because governments are shit.
It's a tough job.
Of course it is. I don't want to do it. That's why I tell jokes for a living, drink red wine at night with you. That's the thing I'd like. That, you know, if there's one event in recent history you'd want to time travel to, that'd be it.
I'd go back to 1941.
Yeah.
And then hook up with the barmaid in the nearest pub to wherever I was and have a relationship with her, and then I'd just travel back between the two. And I'd probably have a kid with the barmaid.
No one's ever going to commission that. They'll cancel it. You'll get to feel that again.
Everything gets cancelled, Al. Everything gets cancelled.
Well, no, that was a thing Harry Hill once said to me. He said, don't forget, everything except the news and EastEnders, everything gets cancelled.
You can only cancel it yourself by dying.
Or drink driving. Allegedly, as people say when they're trying to be witty about things that have happened. Allegedly.
Have you seen the video of him getting out of the car?
It's I've allegedly seen it.
He might not be drink driving, he might just be playing the part of the most drunk man in the world.
Allegedly. Fucking hell, Rich.
It happened around your gaff.
Yeah,
local. That could have been you.
Local.
You could have been caught up in that mild prang.
Yeah.
Imagine if he killed you.
Well, then...
Then this would be a rubbish...
You'd be talking to Andrew Lawrence, wouldn't you?
That's a good question. Is having sex with a Frankenstein cheating on your partner? If you're in a relationship with someone and you have sex with a Frankenstein, would that be all right?
Frankenstein's monster.
Yes. The monster, the Frankenstein.
The whole body or just the Skellington?
the whole thing.
Can I get another one of these? Then I'll answer the question.
Another glass.
It would be cheating.
What?
But it would be like level two.
Yeah. Because they're dead. It's the dead body that's been reanimated,
exactly.
So it's not...
Exactly.
So you could just say the death wipes out...
Yeah.
Till death us do part. That
which
kind
depends
of
whether you then switch the Frankenstein back off again.
Yeah. What, though, if part of the Frankenstein was part of your partner, so there was a bit of your partner in the Frankenstein?
Well, it's definitely not cheating.
Okay.
In fact, that's the most honourable thing a man can do.
So is having sex with someone that your partner has donated an organ to cheating? As long as part of your partner is in them.
Well, you're donating an organ in the process.
That's true. Temporary.
My second wife, she won't cook the ham for me.
I mean, the thing is, some of these moral dilemmas, with all due respect...
Yes. very revealing.
Well, there's not a select committee thrashing these out right now.
Well, but it tells us a lot.
The Warnock Report doesn't... Do you remember that?
The Warnock report.
Yeah, it was about whether kids should have the pill without their parents knowing.
I don't remember. You got a very
I got a very long, deep memory.
There's some wine.
Boom!
Here's the wine guy.
Thank you, young man.
He's the wine guy.
He's the wine guy.
On a retainer. You did film 18, film 2018.
Last week, and I'm doing it again this week.
Oh, congratulations. That's
Thank
good.
You. Yeah, well, basically, Zoe Ball dropped out.
Oh, yeah.
They rang round. I was free.
Cool.
But that's how some of the greatest stories in entertainment begin, I think. You know?
I'd like to apologise to Alex Petula, who wanted to pass on a message to you, but I just read it. It was like, you know, like on Twitter, there's a lot of people who are just nasty.
Yeah, yeah.
And it said something like, oh, I saw, tell Al, I saw him on film 2018, and it made me... He was being nice, but I had a go at him because I thought he was taking the piss out of me, saying, you know, made me want him to replay, made me wish he was the regular host or something like that. Yeah. But it was phrased in a way you could read it both ways.
Yeah, yeah. I sometimes blunder into those.
Yeah, so I went, oh, why don't you stop being so negative and tell people? And he went, I was being nice. I was saying he was really good. So he really liked you on
good.
The film.
Well, the production really liked me because I can do this week.
Yeah.
the thing is, you know, what is really weird is that BBC One have got this film programme that's on 11.15. It's live, right, on a Wednesday night at 11.15, because apparently Claudia Winkleman liked it being live.
Right.
She's long gone, but they've kind of stuck with it, right? But it's such a weird gig, because so it's me and a couple of critics. So it's Chris and Ellen last week, and the same again this week. And you do, I have to do a trail to camera. We go, hi, I'm Al Murray, and tonight on Film 2018, we'll be taking a journey into the robot world of Pacific Rim. You know, you do the three films, or the intro, and then you go, so that's at 11.15 BBC One. See you there, right? But the really weird thing about it was I didn't know if we were shooting that live, because they'd make the programme live. I didn't know. So they go, all right, Al, here we go, and it's an earpiece. 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And at one, it went fa, 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 fa. And I basically, oh, fuck, how is this happening? Right, why am I in film 86? Right, which is what I think of it as.
Yeah.
And that music was really, you know, you have these peculiar things when you start basically filling in for people at half term.
Yeah.
Which is my broadcasting level. That's the crust I've broken through. You know. Steve Wright wants Easter Monday off. Get Al Murray. You did a great out job, Al. See you at Whitson. And, have a regular gig? Nope. And, you know, I'm the fucking bank holiday cover, and but it was very odd hearing that music, and then you're down the barrel on the telly doing it, very peculiar. But it's a sweet gig. I mean, I saw the Wes Anderson Isle of Dogs today, animated dog movie, and animated Dog Island is how I remember it, rather than Isle of Dogs, and would have been its working title. And then Ready Player One tomorrow, which is the great Spielberg. Don't know yet if it's any good. The Spielberg virtual reality film, which is basically Lawnmower Man with money.
It's good. It's good that it's live, though, because, you know, what if a new film comes out at 11:30?
I think it must have... Well, no.
Wednesday.
Well, no. I think it may well have been designed so she could come from... You could come from a premiere.
Right, I'll just jump
hot
in.
From a premiere in your ball gown dress as... Yeah. Friend of mine used to say, and do the review then and there. But it means you can't write it properly. It means you can't put it. But you know, I'm the cover. What do I know? It's just a bit of a laugh. And these gigs come up where you do these weird cover gigs, and they're really good fun.
Yeah. Well, Steve Wright can't last forever. You could get to take that over. He's an old man. I love Steve Wright. The only thing I listen to Steve Wright in the afternoon. I don't like serious jocking. You know he does serious jocking. Yes. The guy's not listening to Radio 2 on a Friday. He does serious jocking, and then he says, please email him with your serious jocking puns. They're not puns. People just go in, I'm out in my caravan, serious caravanning. That's not, it's just taking the G off the end of a word ending ING. Am I the only one who knows about this? Seriously, it's the most popular radio program in the world. Why is this not getting more?
When you when I filled in for, I did last year, I had to fill in for like a week of it.
Yeah.
And there's that bit where the afterwards where the producer goes, well, that was pretty good. You know, the 6.5 million people listening. And basically, the you know, the blood drains out of your body.
Yeah.
Completely, and think, fuck, was I any good? I don't know. And that, and the, you know, luckily they tell you that after.
Yeah. But it's and then you forget for the next
and
one.
And you have to forget for the next one. Come back in, hey, yeah, yeah, can I have a Pret crayfish sandwich, yeah, please? Carry on like normal. It's fun, though. But it's
good. I really like him. He's a very good...
Longevity.
Well, you know, but when he interviews you, he knows about what you are.
Well, that's,
you are.
He's one of the really... That is actually the thing about Steve.
He doesn't look someone up on Wikipedia and then ask the three things that you've done since the last time you're on. He does proper research.
Well, and then he edits out all the bits which makes him sound inept.
Those are the best bits. I have to put those in on purpose because people like them.
Well, you wouldn't
so
make
much.
The fucking time.
Oh, I was going to talk to you about something else then. I had an idea. Oh, this is... It's 101 podcasts since you were last on. That's incredible, don't you think? It feels like you're podcast 79 and you're podcast 180.
That was after the last election, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, how things have changed since... it went out in September 2015, but we did it, don't tell anyone, in July 2015. We covered it quite cleverly in the podcast.
We did.
A lot's happened since then. You just stood for Parliament and failed to get elected, but close.
Which was the plan.
Yeah.
there was an item on the BBC website the other day going, 10 celebrities who tried to be politicians and failed. Right? And I replied to them once and said, I was taking the piss, right? You know, the manifest, each point in the manifesto was a fucking joke.
Yeah.
Like, any way you read them, they were jokes. Right? I did not try to become a politician.
Could have been a politician.
No, I did not try to become a politician.
You stood.
Explicitly did not. No, I know I stood. But, you know, is Lord Sucks trying to be a politician? Was Los... Well, God rest his soul.
Yes, you know, he was.
Dog passports, that was his idea. He got it into law.
Yeah.
And they were black. Not blue.
A lot's changed since 2015. In politics,
but I don't know that our lives have changed particularly. I mean, that's the other, you know, of course, the sort of surface frenzy of politics, the froth, you know, you've got the Westminster froth, and then all the people who think they're engaged in politics on social media who actually just call each other names. Right? That's not being engaged with politics. That's not engaging with ideas, discussing what on earth we fucking do next. How we solve the problems, deep structural problems we've got in our country, call each other names. Fucking Tories isn't an argument. It's not an argument, right? Fucking socialists isn't an argument. But it's become one. It's awful. And that was all incubated in that election. That was all coming in that election. Conspiracy theories is the explanation to everything. People, you know, the idea that people are only arguing, you know, that people, the relentless argument that surfaced during the EU, that people were only in favour of the EU because they were being paid by the EU, or because that was they were stooges for the EU, rather than accepting arguments in good faith and thrashing them out in good faith. And that's gone. That's evaporated amongst people who regard themselves as politically engaged with the people on social media. There's a complete lack of good faith in argument in politics at the moment. It's awful. And it's infected government. Right, yeah. You know, the Brexit argument is an argument, and the way they're pursuing the deal is an argument of total bad faith, top to bottom. And I would really like to hear one of these intellectual leavers, because there are some people who style themselves as that, right? What is it? Come on, then.
Yeah.
You talked us into it 2 years ago. What actually fucking is it? And they don't know. Because it was only ever, if you were in the Tory party, whether you were for or against Europe, it was which bar you drank in. It ran no deeper than that. Which gang you were in within the Tory party to retain control of the Tory party. So when they actually won, it had no meat on it at all.
Yeah.
And how irresponsible is that? That's the thing that really makes... Because if it's a good idea,
Yeah.
If it really is a good idea, and there's lots of clever people who think it's a good idea, well, then what the fucking hell is it? Show us.
Yeah. Well, until we work out what it is, we don't know what it's going to be. That's the problem.
Brexit means Brexit.
It does.
I mean, and the thing is the thing that dismays me more than anything else about this is it's our generation. It's the people you and I were at university with who've done this.
Yeah.
And that's the and we're not that kind of dick.
We were underground in the.
I know, exactly.
The Oxford Union had upstairs the politics,
yep.
And Boris Johnson,
the idiots,
and downstairs the comedians: Armando Iannucci, yeah. Stuart Lee, Al Murray. Someone should write a play about it. That's all we're going to get
good,
out of it.
Wouldn't be a good play.
Won't be very good because we never met the other side.
No. We had no encounters with them ever.
No,
but I remember Rees Mogg sort of flitting around, you know, yeah. Throwing his right wing shapes.
Yeah.
Because that's all he's doing.
Did he have a top hat on at university?
No, but I remember him looking like Plug. But it dismays me that it's our generation that have done this, and they've done it. The Tory end of it have done it chiefly for sport. They've done it because aside from the outliers, we live in an extremely rich country with inequalities, but is generally rich. If you compare it to a place like Cambodia, where people don't have cradle to grave healthcare, we are all essentially rich, yeah. Right? And I know there's food banks, and I know there's people on disability being cracked down on. I know all about that, but in Cambodia. None of that structure exists. So none of the things none of the safety net that's being tinkered with and attacked and all that that's happening here. And so I'm not saying none of that's real, but none of that exists in a place like Cambodia. There is no National Health Service. So in that sense, we are rich people. We're entertained to death. We're idle. We live for forever. We have foreign people who come and wipe our asses for us in the places where we go to die, right? What is there for politics to do? Arguably, yeah. You know? The trains run roughly on time. No, I mean this quite seriously. And I think we're kind of in a sort of, you know, we're in a kind of wealthy stasis. And we're at the, you know, we're not at the top of the heap. We're near the top of the shit heap.
Yeah.
Right? And so politicians in the end have run out of causes. They've run out of... crusades. Barbara Castle famously said that in the late 60s that Labour had a real problem on their hands because everyone now had an indoor toilet, right? That they'd conquered kids in clogs poverty, right? So they were going to have to find something else to tackle in that yeah. respect. And, you know, it was honest of her to talk about that like that. And obviously there are other things that... But we live in a... And this isn't to say, I mean, because the moment you posit this argument, people go, oh, you know, you don't care about the people at the bottom. I really fucking do. But there are people way below on another whole other bottom that we don't think about generally, which is why our politics has become unimportant. And they're arguing about the constitutional arrangements the whole time. If you're arguing about constitutional arrangements, you're not arguing about anything meaningful to people's lives. You know, if you're tinkering with the Constitution, you're not worrying about schools. You're not spending your time on schools. You're not spending your time on healthcare. You're not spending your time on defence or jobs or transport or any of those fucking things. You're arguing about what you're doing as a politician, you're arguing about how much power politicians should have.
Yeah.
And why wouldn't they, you know, that's...
Yeah, so when they're taking a gamble that we might be very slightly better off or a lot worse off after we do this.
Or it's just kind of roughly the same, but it's going to cost us a shitload of money. But I don't know. I mean, you know, it sort of strikes me. I mean, the Conservative Party has a history of every other generation. It reaches a point. Imperial preference is the, you know, is when corn laws, imperial preference, home rule in Ireland were generational points where the Conservative Party would have its own internal problem. Right, where they couldn't They're a tribe, and they can never decide whether they're patriotic or whether they're free trade. Because if you're patriotic, you can't be free trade, because that involves letting other people have a crack, right? And every other generation have this problem where they go, fuck! How do we resolve this? And rather than resolve it themselves, they put it to the country to solve their problem for them, and then have a reset and soldier on, like, which is exactly what's happened to us, to us. You know, and you read about the Corn Laws and you think, well, that's those daft fucking Victorians. Never happened here. And it's exactly what's happening right now. And it's distracting from everything else.
Well, that's the problem. I saw it had Jess Phillips on and talking about that. Yeah. The fact that there's no other business can be done because, you know, and there's nothing else to talk about. But there's lots of other things that should be being done. It seems like to me that both main parties are using it as an attempt to shore themselves up.
Totally.
And not caring about what happens to the country. It's kind of crazy that they both are basically over
one,
Brexit.
Opportunistically, I mean, you know, when you look into the polling, and because there's the famous Labour constituencies that voted Leave, right? That Labour need to protect, they won't vote Labour. When they poll those people, in or out of the EU, is like 15th,
right?
So, if Labour switched to Remain, would those people abandon Labour? We don't know, do we? But it looks pretty unlikely because they're concerned about because Leave got fed through a prism of all the other things that were going on in the country. You know, yeah. I mean, if Leave was basically, do you like the way things are now? Yes or no? I mean, which button are you going to fucking push? Right? And you know that's what the referendum boiled down to. But I mean, the other thing is, apparently, one of the things Cameron said before the referendum, I can't remember where I read this, but basically before everyone picked a side, before Boris and all those people picked a side, he said to them, look, do you really want 10 years of Euro wank, right? Because that's what you're going to get.
Yeah.
Lo and behold, here we are.
Well, it'd be interesting if, you know, Boris Johnson wrote those two articles and if he'd decided to go the other way, or when you see that with the face of...
I think that's oversold. I think if he'd been for Remain, it would have still been Leave, because you've had 30 years, because the press, of course, were in favour of it when it first happened. 30 years of... I mean, 30 years of relentless negativity about Europe.
Yeah.
Politicians on, you know, Remain were caught in hot. Remain, all the people on the Remain side had never ever had to make a case for it before because it was the status quo. Right. Whereas if you're against the status quo, you can make any old case, promise any old shit. So, I mean, I don't think which side Boris on makes a jot of difference. It's do you like things as they are now? You press no, don't you? Because there's lots to be annoyed about.
Yeah.
Fucking fooled us. Well, that's the other thing. You look at all the research and you look at the word cloud, it's immigration.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, people have been dishonest about that. Just be honest about it.
Yeah. The pub lander.
We were laughing about cocks earlier.
The pub lander.
I was going to fuck a topic.
Yeah. Well, the topic was
we're doing that right now.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
The pub landlord said something I hadn't really considered. I think it's very... that someone should have said beforehand, because the sovereignty issue is like we get sovereignty, but we don't get... We lose our say in...
Well, no, I mean, of course, you know... I mean, so... I mean, I was a bit annoyed when I wrote this bit of material. That it doesn't get articulated. Is that sovereignty... If you pool sovereignty, arguably you have far more influence... than if you don't,
yeah,
right? Because we were part of a, well, we're still part of it, but you know, I mean, which is of course the embarrassing thing about the Skripal affair is suddenly we're going to the EU. We all need to stick together in the face of Russian aggression, and Europe's going, oh, okay. I mean, as if, you know, we've told them to fuck off.
Yeah,
that's the anyway. Yeah, so you know, if you're part of a thing, they can't. You know, the idea that we lack sovereignty because they can tell us what we can and can't do. Well, we can tell them what they can and can't do. We actually extended our power over hundreds of millions of people in a way that we never had done before without firing a shot,
yeah,
which is our usual way of extending power. So, you know, I mean, no one ever talked about it like that in terms of influence. If influence is the thing you want.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, all of this is so, I mean, honestly, all of this is so boring. And they've forced us into a boring place, haven't they, these wankers?
Yeah, we'll see what happens. Well, I've got a plan. I'm not going to tell you what it is yet. I've got a plan.
All right, have you time travelled? Is this you actually time travelling? Have you come back from 2025?
I believe the children are our future.
That's why I'm really fucking terrified. I've met your children.
We'll see. I think things have
to... God, we're on a downer now. We were a laugh earlier and it's like, oh God. This is what they've done to us, these bastards. Those people who are upstairs while we were sniggering at them.
You could do a TV series about it. Call it Downstairs, Upstairs. Let's pitch it. Let's take it in. Get Sorkin to write it.
Sorkin?
Yeah, Aaron Sorkin.
Aaron Sorkin.
From off the West Wing. Mm. He could do it. I'd be the main character in it. Playing that 19-year-old version of myself.
Well, it's all about suspension of belief, isn't it?
You played Bottom opposite Judi Dench.
That's one of the things that's happened since I saw you. Yeah.
It's on Wikipedia.
It's on YouTube somewhere.
How is it?
That was amazing. That was a really mad night because it was Shakespeare. What was the anniversary? 400 of his from his death.
35th anniversary.
Yeah. You're time travelling again, Rich. And it was very odd. I got the call. Do you want to do this thing, right? And Greg Doran rang me, who's the director of the RSC, and said, I would really love you to do this. And it's one of those phone conversations where he obviously was going to pitch, and I went, yep, yeah, I'll do it. I've always thought that the one thing I'd love to see is Al Murray's Bottom, and we all have a good laugh at that. And they go, yeah, I'll do it. Yeah, I'll do it. Yeah. And you'll be appearing opposite. Yeah, I'll do it. Yeah. Right. But what happened is when he asked me to do it in the January, is it wasn't Judi Dench. Someone else was going to do it.
Right.
Who then went into the Harry Potter play.
Right.
And they wouldn't release her. So they ring me back and go. I went away to Melbourne, the Melbourne Festival. I get back from the Melbourne Festival. I got a message on my aunt's phone. You need to schedule in your rehearsals with Judi Dench. And you're like, fuck, right? But the best thing about it was there's this moment we did a couple of rehearsals and John Lithgow was in the thing before me doing Malvolio because he took a summer out to go to Stratford and do Malvolio in Twelfth Night and you know quit Hollywood to do the RSC and he's in the wings about to go on and he goes. He leans over and goes, "Hey, Al, you got to follow me, and I'm really good." And then... and then... goes on. Ah, mistress, you know, like, really funny. And you're thinking... because it was live telly. Yeah. I mean, it was really, really... although, what it was... It was really strange because it was all very... Prince Charles did a bit. They did this Hamlet sketch.
Yeah, I remember seeing that, yeah.
Yeah. Given the occasion, they got that was perfect.
Yeah.
Although Papa, Essidu, who was the guy playing Hamlet, and it was they'd done their first black Hamlet at the RSC.
Okay.
In 2015, right? little behind schedule. And he had to come on and do "To Be or Not to Be," that is the question. And then Tim Minchie came on and went, "No, mate, you got to go To Be or Not to Be."
Yeah.
And then a series of people came on and did it, like Cumberbatch and Rory Kinnear and all these people come on and correct him. And then in the end, Prince Charles came on and went, no, it's To Be or Not to Be, that is the question, right? And then they went, "Ah, of course it is." And then they all, big laughs, they all fucked off. And Papa then had to do the speech again. The whole thing from scratch. Poor sod. But it was an amazing night, and yeah. I go on and I do my bottom in my ears and come on and all that, and you know I was in a donkey jacket. It's quite brilliant.
Yeah, it's clever. They're not very
some really clever people.
Yeah,
really clever people are working in theatre today. And and in rehearsal, I'd said, "Yeah, but when Judy comes on behind me, no one's going to be looking at me." I said this to Greg. He went, no, don't be stupid. Of course they'll be looking at you. And so there's a bit where she goes, what angel wakes me from my slumber or whatever? And the place basically went ape shit. And there really was that. It's a really good, it's good for performers to have that moment. You go, what, you know, what am I, chopped liver? You know, absolutely. No one gave a flying fuck about me. I come on, I do all my antics, you know, where the bee sucks. It wasn't, but I can't remember the lines. I couldn't remember the lines. And she appears behind me and they put her out on a thrust with all these fairies. And the place goes apeshit. It basically completely, it was brilliant. Everyone forgot I was there. And, you know, performers need that moment where they have their ego like sliced off of them. And that was it.
You definitely do need that moment, Al. Yeah. You out of everyone.
All the time. He's no, it was an extraordinary thing to do.
Sure.
But also, it was, you, every now and again, you get to do these gigs. And I was only on for like, it was only like a 4-minute segment. So you go on and do a bit. And then there's this mad curtain call where you're waiting in line behind Helen Mirren.
Yeah.
And all the, you know, Ian McKellen, totally star-studded, it was insane.
Yeah.
And you think, complete imposter syndrome, what on earth am I doing here? And no one talking to me in the lineup. Prince Charles and Camilla come round. Evening. Move on swiftly.
Aww.
But that's all right. It's good to be at that. And then essentially you're adrenalized for the next 9 hours and thinking, did that actually happen?
And have they invited you back to perform?
Yeah, but I couldn't do it. Yeah, I was going to go into whatever they were doing last summer, but I couldn't. Trinculo, which plays that?
Oh, yeah, it's The Tempest. I played Trinculo at school.
Yeah.
I'll do an audition for the RSC now. There's my camera. Here's neither bush nor shrub to fend off any weather at all. And another storm brewing. I hear it sing in the wind.
Is he a drunk?
You same clap. No, that's Stefano is drunk.
All right.
Trinculo's
well, I got off Jester. I couldn't do it. And I have a feeling that I may have burned my bridge with the RSC by saying no. But I was working.
Yeah. It's hard. And like, well, you've done Panto, so you know that kind of...
Oh, God, that was brilliant.
You've done this it was longish... thing in a play.
64
shows. God, that is a lot.
Yeah,
but like concentrated in one place though. One place, that must be good.
No, that is the best bit
because that's the whole thing of the touring. Yeah. The hard.
But
bit.
It's so funny because all the people in it are going, "It's such hard work, oh darling. This is going to be the hardest work of your life." And I'm thinking, I'm on it. I'm in about a third of it. I normally do 2 hours on my own, and we have to drive there, and then it's in Preston, so I want to kill myself, and then
try playing Warsaw, mate. That's the
Warsaw.
Walsall. Warsaw.
All right. Okay. I thought you had like. Is there a Polish leg of the herring? No. And so Panto was ace.
Yeah.
Really great.
What were you in the Panto?
I don't know if you know the story of Jack and the Beanstalk.
Yeah, you're the Beanstalk.
No. You know the hero's called Jack.
Were you the goose that laid the topic chocolate eggs?
No, the Jack has a brother.
Okay.
Called Al. And wait for it. He's the barman. At the Squishy Cow Pat in Mootown.
Okay. And a much older brother, by the way. It must have been from a previous...
Well...
Previous relationship.
I was 49. Jack was 31.
Okay.
I'm a white male.
Yes.
Liam is... Well, basically, Clive, who played our mum's a black guy.
Right.
That was the hilarious...
Can
joke.
Happen. Can happen.
It can happen. I mean, nature offers that option.
Look at Twins with Danny DeVito and Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Do I have to? No, it was really good fun. And because you get to sing and cock about, but also there's that thing you can't say fuck, right?
Yeah.
And this is proper showbiz anecdote.
Okay, go on.
Right. So just before I did it, I was filming this thing, and Jimmy Tarbuck was there. It was a program about the London Palladium,
right.
And Tarbuck goes, what? He always calls me boy, and I'm like, come on, Jimmy, like, this is impossible. I'm in my late 40s. He goes, what are you up to at the moment, boy? I can't do an impression. He goes, I said, well, I'm doing Jack and the Beanstalk. Oh, I did that 1972 at wherever, and we did 64 shows. They did like 180, you know, because they do. Three on a Saturday, three on a Sunday, and they'd start in end of November and go to like fucking April or something,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Completely mad. And he said, he goes, you know when you're not in the mood? I'll tell you a story. Because he starts reciting the lines and they're the same because panto scripts just get sort of passed on.
Yeah.
And he goes, you know when you're not in the mood? You come into work and you're just not in the mood. And I said, yeah. He goes, you know, I don't know what it was. Put some money on the wrong horse or something and thinking, well, I've never gambled in my life. But and he goes, and there's a bit where there's this joke in the show where they go, I've had to sell the COW, right? Because the cow can understand, right?
Yeah.
Panto, get over yourselves, right? I mean, in A Midsummer Night's Dream, he's turned into a donkey, and that's fucking art. Right? Literature, right? But the cow can understand. So he goes, we've had to sell the COW. And the jester, Idle Jack, or whatever he's called, goes, not the dog! Right?
Yeah.
Huge fucking laugh. Right? And they go, no, the COW. Go, no, not the cat. Right? And I try and do it differently every night to see which, in the end, which one will get the best, biggest laugh.
Yeah, yeah.
They're all it's one of those identical laugh every time, right? Regardless of how you performed it. And so, and Tarbuck's going, you got that bit, haven't you? Well, one day, I can't do him. He goes, you had to sell the COW. And he goes, oh, not the fucking cow. Said the whole room, you know, and it, Blackpool or something, the whole room went, wah! And he goes, and he said, apologies, ladies and gentlemen, you know, tough morning. Not the dog. And he said, there were these little kids in the audience going, say it again.
It is a proper theatrical ando, so you all have to have the word fuck or cunt. Their punchline has to be cunt in most. Yeah. And then he said, what a cunt! And that's basically everything.
Come in my face, you filthy queer, is my favourite phrase. I'm not going to tell the anecdote, that's just the punchline.
Oh, dear.
Oh. Come in my face, you filthy queer. That's apparently how that story ends.
Okay. I'm sure.
It's not mine to tell.
You know, we did an hour and 45 last time we did the podcast.
Yeah. Have we beaten it?
No. Feels like it.
Keep going.
I've got to get trains back to Hertfordshire now. It's all changed.
You've changed.
I've changed. It's all different. I didn't realise this about you. This is going to be... You were at boarding school when you were 9 years. Really young.
Yeah.
That's tough, though, isn't it?
Well, I didn't like it.
You weren't allowed to collect PG tips cards?
No. Stickers? Well, basically, it's quite simple. My dad worked for British Rail. And he could speak Spanish because he grew up in Spain. And... British Rail were trying to sell a railway to the Venezuelans.
Right.
and so he had a job in Venezuela, and I remember that he went for like sort of 3 months, and I think my mum went, well, we're coming out to Venezuela, so we went out to Venezuela for 3 months. And then I had to go to the school, and then we came back from Venezuela, but I still had to go to the school that they put me in. Even though we'd come back from Venezuela. So there's, you know, the odd rejection issue in there.
Yeah. It's tough, though. I mean, I can't imagine doing that, you know, like an 8 or 9 years old. I think our generation's got a very different attitude towards kids than our parents' generation had.
Yeah, definitely. I mean... You'd only send a kid to boarding school if they asked. And also, boarding schools now are unrecognisable from the thing I went to. You know, when I first went, it was a weekly boarding house, it was called. And so we would go home at the weekends. Saturday afternoon, you'd go home, come back Monday morning. And we had a housemaster, and it was such a small building room. We'd hear him row with, we'd hear him listen to, lie awake at night listening to him rowing with his wife, right? I mean, you get that at home. Why does that cost extra? But it was it is a peculiar experience. And then I did that till I was, you know, I was there till I was 18.
Right.
And for a long time, school was the longest place I'd lived in.
Yeah.
In my life, before finally I, you know, settled down in where I live now, sort of 16, 17 years ago. I do wonder what I'd be like if I hadn't gone.
Yeah.
I probably wouldn't be doing, you know, I know a big part of my kind of essential ego neediness that's made me into a performer comes completely out of being 9 when I got there and just trying to fucking figure it all out, because I was never very good at any of that.
No. It's a very tough thing, you know, like I think there's a prejudice against public school boys and girls, which is sort of understandable.
No, it's incomprehensible. I didn't choose to go to
public
school.
No, but it
wasn't my decision. If it had been my decision, fine. But to pigeonhole someone as, oh, you went to boarding school. Well, yeah. Yeah, and when I was 9, was I high-fiving my mum and dad for the opportunity? No, it's stupid.
Yeah.
To blame people for their background... And mine's a privileged background, but to blame someone for the upbringing they were put through is absurd.
Yeah.
And to judge them by it, and not give them the benefit of the doubt that they may have digested it and put it behind them, is absurd. It's silly. It's like saying working class people can only ever be fucking oiks.
Yeah.
It's the same reflex.
Well, it is. But that's what the world has become, hasn't it? It's you know, and as a comedian, you're you know, on Twitter, then that means something to the people on Twitter. That means something, doesn't it?
Well, no. I mean, the other day, a guy, you know, oh, look at this, you know, in the opening paragraph of my Wikipedia page, because I've got this weird esoteric family that I mainly know about because of my Wikipedia page. I mean, you know, that's been the interesting thing is, oh, really? I'd had no idea, right? And they go, look at you, your upbringing, that must be how you think, right? Well, what if I were Jewish? Would they do that to me? And go, look at you and your upbringing, your background, so that's how you think.
Those people would, yeah.
Well, the people who use your background to judge you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because it's the same thing. It's the same impulse.
But it's that same easy...
Lazy.
You know, well, yeah, it's that straight in bang. This is what this person's like. This is what, you know, that's that. When I'm doing stuff like the International Men's Day or whatever, yeah. anything a little bit controversial on Twitter, then you'll get people who go, "You're this, 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 and this." And they obviously don't know who I am.
Well, a bloke yesterday, went on at me at Twitter. I mean, you know, it's turning into a Ricky Gervais show, isn't it? There's a bloke on Twitter said this to me, and I've completely fucking destroyed him. but the, you know, a guy going, "You've been made you." I used to like you, but then you went on the BBC in 2016 and you've taken the vow of silence, right? They make you take a vow of silence. You won't talk about rape gangs in Rotherham, you know, and there's a shopping list, right? I don't know, there might be some people who work at the BBC, there might not. First of all, I was freelance, never worked there, so your initial assertion is wrong, I'm afraid, sir. Yeah. You know, if we're going to do that. But that... I haven't been to the Vow of Silence office. But,
I have. I'm not allowed to talk about it then.
It's just stupid. It's stupid. And people are, you know, making their decisions based on this hogwash. And, yeah. you know, there isn't one, you know, anyone who knows, is that brushed up against the BBC at all, there isn't one BBC.
No.
You know, Radio 2 have no fucking idea what's going on Radio 4. They're not interested. Why would they be? You know, Radio 5... Half of Radio 5 hates the other half of Radio. You know, like, before we even get started on what's on the telly, I mean, it's just silly. But people need these sort of touchstones. They go, "Oh, you're a BBC lefty comic." Am I? The BBC have always loathed my comedy. I've never been to Get the Pub Landlord on TV at the BBC. They don't like it, which is fine. I don't mind that. But it's ITV and Sky, mate. You know, I'm a fucking commercial whore. I'm not... like a lefty public servant or yeah. whatever they want to project on you. And always people are relentlessly projecting what they think of public school is what I must have gone through rather yeah. than what I went through.
But then some people don't think of it in that way, you know, they do think, I mean, and maybe things are different now, but you know, that experience of being left for 9 years, well, not left, but...
I wasn't left.
But you were not with your parents for a big...
Yeah, it was weird, but it's so long ago. The other thing is so long ago. It's a lot less significant to who I am now than happened in my, you know, my last marriage. You always got to have a last marriage. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's the thing that's more important rather than, you know, boarding school. And it's funny. There's some friends I'm in touch with still from school, but they're generally not the people I had to share a room with, because that's where we all ended up. You know, it's not the army.
No. And on Wikipedia, it says you were briefly head boy.
Yeah.
It doesn't explain what that's the most interesting two
well,
words.
Well, no, it's very simple.
Three words.
Very simple. Because you're the same vintage as me, you used to be able to do an Oxbridge exam after your A-levels. Do you remember that?
Yep.
Seventh term Oxbridge. Right? Because I tried...
I couldn't do it because I didn't go to public school, so I had to get a conditional offer on doing my A-levels.
Well, you're cleverer than me. It's an acknowledged fact.
had to work on because they never were on a plate like you did. With William Thackeray's Millions. You got from writing Penn Dennis.
So more than Vanity Fair. So there was third term, wasn't there, before your A-levels.
Yep.
So I stayed on for the extra term.
Right.
Which was an awful experience. It was a terrible thing. All my mates had left.
Yeah.
Right? It was awful. And they made what they tended to do, if you did that, they'd make you head boy.
Right.
And I remember, and I was not engaged with that at all. I was thinking... Well, this is basically a skive because all I've got to do is prepare for this one paper or two papers and an interview. You know, so I've got the autumn to like doss about. So I was not interested in the formalities of being head boy at all.
So did they sack you or did you just do it for the...
No, I just sort of petered out and then I did my Oxbridge and I got in and I'm like, right, I'm off now. It's really boring.
That's why they don't go into more details on it on the Wikipedia page. But I'm going
to
go
because there's nothing to it. You know?
I'm going to go and edit the Wikipedia page and put all of that in verbatim, including my interjections.
Please do. Make that page a lot more fucking interesting.
Well, we're
ending on that.
I'll ask you a
lot of
questions.
Head boy. It's like the end of this, like the petering out of my school career.
I wasn't head boy at my school.
No,
my dad was the headmaster, and my brother had been head boy, and they felt that we were too much of
twice would have been twice would have been guests.
I don't think I would have been even if that hadn't been the case, though. So
rubbish.
Rubbish. Steve Cheek was a great...
Your leadership material.
I am, really am, yeah. Look,
we'd all follow Rich, wouldn't we?
These people would, but they weren't, you know, that would be like a school full of the nerdiest person in each school, wouldn't it? So that it's like they go, right, you're coming
Nerd
out...
Academy. There's your movie.
You know, your granddad died at Dunkirk and my granddad's brother died in Dunkirk.
Which regiment?
I don't know. Middlesbrough regiment.
Oh, right, OK. Where?
Dunkirk.
It's quite a large action.
I just wonder they might have died together in each other's arms.
It's unlikely.
One day... Well, your grandson and my grandson-nephew.
Was he in the 2nd Bucks Battalion, Oxbucks Light Infantry Territorials?
Don't know much about him. He was funny, apparently. That's all I know about him. I don't know what he was called. It wasn't my granddad. It was my granddad's brother.
You should look into it, I reckon.
Yeah, I should have a look.
Because then this would be a better conversation. I'd go back 20 seconds and fix it.
We'd have gone, oh, I'm from Middlesbrough. And you'd have gone, well, I'm the Lord Buckley of the Marlborough Street. We're still the same here, though.
Well,
and one day, the children from two generations now will do a podcast together.
That's definitely what they were fighting for. I think the most important thing to do right now is to project what people were fighting for in World War II back onto them to justify whatever the fuck you want to do.
Yeah.
My grandfather definitely died, so you could ask me which chocolate I like to shove up my arse.
If I could travel back through time, I would go there and I would tell him that was what was going on. I would go back and save his life. I would go back to the bit where he was already about to die. And they go,
apparently he was a great laugh.
Oh. My great uncle was as well.
Yeah, here we go.
Yeah, they were nice. So your mum didn't have a dad?
No, he was killed in May 25th, Hazebrouck, literally in an every man for himself action. Although there's a dispute about whether anyone ever actually said that.
Right.
Because no one wants to be the bloke that said that. Anyway, and she was born in September, so she never knew her dad.
It's full of tragedy, your life story.
But you know, not that we can dwell on.
No, let's dwell on it.
No.
My great uncle was from Middlesbrough, so no one cares where he was. They got a letter saying he wasn't coming back. I don't think they just never came back. I don't think they knew.
They got a letter. It was all quite formalised and everything. They did have that all. Unfortunately, they had that all like kind of worked out.
Yeah. If there's another war, I'm going to be the bloke who does the letters.
But then you'll have to move in slow motion while the trumpet plays distantly on a hill.
There probably will be another world war. We've managed to get old enough not to be involved in it, though.
I think the kind of world war that's coming, we will definitely be involved in the way that we get boiled in the bag.
Yeah. Not in Hertfordshire, that'll be fine out there, right?
No, you're going to get got.
Miles away.
No, you're going to get got. Where do you live?
In Hertfordshire.
Where? Narrow it down, fucker.
I'll tell you off stage. Near to...
Coordinates.
Near to...
coordinates, please.
To the town of Hitchin.
All right, yeah, definitely. Big intel centre, you're going to get fried.
No one would bomb Hitchin. It's too nice. Well...
Are they not going to bomb it so that the Nazi high command can stay there?
That's everywhere.
That's one of my... It's fucking everywhere. I love that. The World War II myth is basically everywhere they missed. They go, oh, they didn't hit this because the Nazi high command were planning to stay there. In fact, no one could hit a fucking thing at the time.
is Balham, Bedford.
Yeah, it's Bedford. Yeah, it's that big block, isn't it? Yeah. What's it called? The Duquesne Court.
Duquesne Court, that's it, yeah.
Which people say was, a big landmark from the sky, and the Nazis had planned to keep it for an SS headquarters. But it's basically, no one could hit anything with any degree of, not even... The Americans hit schools with alarming regularity when they're not planning to. That's a topical joke from 12 years ago.
And wedding sinking missiles.
Yeah.
Right, I've got to go back to wherever I live in Hertfordshire. Just say goodbye to my family. Because either we're going to die in nuclear war or they're off straight off to boarding school tomorrow. 3 years old and 6 months old.
Get on with
never
it.
Never too soon to
start. The sooner you alienate your children, the sooner they get a great career in show business.
Yeah. Would you like to come back in 101 podcasts and do it again?
We'll have this same fucking conversation.
Yeah. It probably will be.
Yeah, it will, won't it?
It's nice to see you, we kind of don't see.
That's
we
what we said at the end of the last one.
Yeah.
I know. I've got a semi-photographic memory. It is.
It was very similar to this.
Very similar to this. Yeah, we beat it out weekly.
We couldn't stop it. Couldn't stop talking.
No.
Everyone wanted.
Have you
to go
read
home.
That book? Can I recommend a book that everyone reads? You know who Peter Hennessy is? He's a political historian.
Okay.
Right, Lord Hennessy is now, and he wrote a really amazing book called Secret State, which is about Cold War preparations for. The Cold War going nuclear, and it's really good because it's like he's spoken to all the people involved, and it's a really densely written book, but it's also very personal. So there'll be a bit where he goes on about that he had a recurring nightmare where he's with his brother-in-law or something, and he sees a flash in the sky, and he thinks, shit, Bristol's been nuked, and all my family are dead. Right, so it's got a guy living through this, but also a guy completely shaking down the history. It's fantastic. And it's got all that stuff about how after the Cuban Missile Crisis, the Macmillan government realised they hadn't got a protocol worked out for what to do with their nuclear weapons. So they'd bought all these nuclear bombers and they were just buying Polaris, but they hadn't actually figured out if it kicked off, what would they do? So there's one point during the Cuban Missile Crisis where they're in the Prime Ministerial car and they literally pull over and go to a phone box. And no one's got any money, so they tried to do a reverse charge call to the Ministry of Defence. Hello, it's Harold Macmillan here. Boop, 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 boop. Literally, right? I need to speak to the War Office to talk to them about what our nuclear response is. Oh, yeah, of course you fucking are, mate. Right? The whole thing, right? And then they figured out they had to put a telephone, a radio in the car and all that. And there's this really... There's all this stuff about, the civil service, they had a list... And of who was going to go into the bunker outside Bath in Box Hill. There's a facility in there, right? Who would get to go, right? When as they used to say, the balloon went up. And there was one civil servant who said, so there was a train, and you were supposed, if you were on the list, you'd get a thing. You'd get the, because they did exercises to practice this, right? You get this thing in your in tray, and you had to go to Paddington for 2 o'clock and get on the special train, right? And the special train would go at 40 miles an hour, so it wasn't speeding, so it would not draw attention to itself, and it would just potter along, right? And one of these civil servants, he talked about how it went past his garden outside Reading, right? And so what he was going to do was jump off the train as it went past his garden and go back to his family.
Right.
Because if we were going to be nuked, he wants to be with his family rather than in some horrible bunker with all the people he worked with and the Prime Minister. and this book's brilliant because that was the... People were preparing for this thing, knowing it was going to be... And that read that. I say, anyway, you just the idea of you going back to...
Yeah, that'll cheer them up, won't it? After this, I thought we were going to get read this book to take your minds off the nuclear.
We've got all that stuff about that if the Today program's on in the morning, they won't nuke Moscow. You know that thing?
No.
Oh, so there's the letters. God, no, come on, this is interesting because this is the thing we lived under when people go, "No, we're terrorism." We're going to fry each other in a fucking heartbeat. Anyone who knows about Abel Archer and all that. But there's a... you know what Abel Archer is, right? NATO exercise, early 80s. The Russians thought the NATO exercise was actually a preemptive prelude to a third world war.
Yeah.
So they put everything on standby and they were going to nuke us. And then one guy went, no, it's not. It's an exercise. And he had to go all the way to the top of the food chain and argue his case. There's this Russian guy who basically saved the world. Anyway, the letters of last resort are, and they still exist, so it's the Trident subs. How it works, when you become prime minister, the civil service sit you down, and the chief of staff comes in and goes, right, in all the Trident subs, there's a letter in a safe to tell you what to do in the event of nuclear war. And they then advise you on your options. And one's like nuke Moscow, and the next one's go to America and hand yourself over to the US Navy, and the other one's go to Australia. And then there's or you can write what you want, right? And the story is that when the new government comes in, you get the new letter of last resort and you burn the old one, you never read it. Although I bet they've read it. You've read it. And it would say, I'm wanking as I write this. But the thing is, they're supposed to do, if it's all gone off, they're supposed to send the aerial up to the top at 6 a.m. GMT or 7 a.m. GMT. And if the Today programme's on, they don't open the safe and get the letter of last resort out.
Right.
On long wave. Fucking incredible. You know, so there's people with that. Yeah. Apparently Tony Blair, when they sat him down, he went white, completely white as a sheet with the responsibility.
Yeah.
Rather than went red and went, ha-ha, I must bathe in the blood of, you know, whatever, like people
well,
insist. Sorry, you know, I love all this. I love
it
all
will
stuff.
Definitely happen, won't it? Because, you know, just there'll be a mistake or... You know,
could happen.
Just someone will become president of America who might just think there will be a laugh. That could happen.
Especially if a prostitute was saying a load of stuff about him and he needed a distraction.
Well, also, some of the wee might just hit the button and set it off.
There is definitely a video of him being pissed on, isn't there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've got it on my phone. It's just a picture. I'm going to have to go, but it's lovely to talk to you. Come back in 101 episodes.
No,
I've got to go.
Around,
I need
a wee.
Man, I'm old. I'm tired and I'm old. I've got children now. I didn't have children last time we spoke. Did I add one, maybe?
Oh, yeah, chilled.
Yeah, I had a little tiny child, didn't I? But I had a five-month-old. I had the same thing as I've got now, but then I've got a three-year-old as well. It's twice as hard. You should try having more than one kid, Al. You know what it's like. You've got no idea what I'm going through.
A teenage child to hold it for you.
Yeah, that would be good.
Go to the toilet to sit down and read a book for half an hour.
But I think a teenager's much more likely to murder the baby than a... Because, you know, by the time you're a teenager, you go, yeah, I can kill it, and if I do, you know, I'll probably get away with it.
It's a risk you've got to take.
It's for
you want half an hour off.
Half an hour poo. I need a half an hour poo. Oh, I look back on it. Maybe one day. All right, ladies and gentlemen, please give a massive round of applause, Al Murray! Been listening to Rich Herring's Let's Square Theatre podcast with me, Rich Herring, and my guest Alan Murray. The music's my best. Everyone here would like to thank all the people here, that it's themselves, it's everyone at Let's Square Theatre, everyone going past the strike. Orange Mark, he's probably owed some more orange juice by now at the British Comedy Guide. Ian Tunes, Ewan Tube, the lot of them, all of them. I mean, definitely my producer, Ben Walker. And it's a fuzz. Go Past the Strike and Sky Potato production.
The biggest names in tennis are coming to Paris for the most anticipated Roland Garros in years. Tennis Channel Plus is your place to watch. Stream every court from your phone or smart TV live in HD. Experience 3 weeks of unparalleled tournament access as the world's top players in tennis face off against each other. Will the veteran champions continue their dominance, or will a fresh face emerge to challenge their legacy on the clay courts? Daily live coverage of this epic showdown begins Monday, May 20th. Don't miss a matchup. Stream it now with Tennis Channel Plus to be there when it happens.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Thanks for listening. RichardHerring.com/gigs. GoFasterStripe.com for all my books, downloads, all that sort of shizzle. Oh, yeah, I know all the cool words. And would love to see you on the Can I Have My Ball Back tour if you can make it. Bye.